Mr. President.
The Majority Leader.
The Senator is impugning the motives and conduct of our colleague from Alabama, as warned by the Chair. I call the Senator to order under the provisions of Rule 19.
Mr. President.
The Senator from Massachusetts.
Mr. President, I am surprised that the words of Coretta Scott King are not suitable for debate in the United States Senate. I ask leave of the Senate to continue my remarks.
Is there objection?
Object.
I appeal the ruling.
Objection is heard. The Senator will take her seat.
This was a perfect audio clip with which to begin today's show. Because what you heard in that one clip was both patriarchy, the defense of it, smacking down a woman, and the defense of what I'm going to refer to as the Southern economy. These are the two things, the two main things that I'm going to get into in today's show. And of course, so much more. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. My name is Melvin. I'm the host of this here show, and I really appreciate you coming along for the ride. So it's pretty easy to just open this mic every week and just talk about the things that President Dum Dum has done. And on this show, there has been no shortage of that. We like to point out here some of the insane things that are happening out there. Some things you notice, maybe some things you haven't. And what I'm realizing, so when Trump first got into the campaign and he was doing insane things every day, I go, there's no way he's going to be able to keep this up. Certainly not until Election Day. And then, of course, it turned out to be wrong. Fine. He's president now. There's no way. Hold on. I've said that before. I don't get to say that again because it's pretty clear he's going to keep it up. But he's a showman. He's not a leader. He's not an entertainer. He's a showman. And so for a lot of us, it can be pretty easy to get, just to watch that shiny thing all day. Just, oh, there it is off in the distance. Everybody, look, it's doing something crazy, right? Hey, everybody. Everyone's saying the word COFEFE. Perhaps we should all say COFEFE. And then everybody gets lost doing that stuff. And while all of that stuff is happening, while those fireworks are going off in the sky, down here on ground level, inside people's lives, real consequential things are happening. And those consequential things are largely happening to women and African Americans. Just an example. So back in April, Trump decided to roll back the Obama-era protections for women workers. This by Mary Emily O'Hara from Salon, if I'm not mistaken. With little notice, Trump signed an executive order that advocates say rolls back hard-fought victories for women in the workplace. On March 27th, the 2014 Fair Pay and Safe Workplaces order, then President Barack Obama put into place to ensure the companies with federal contracts simply comply with 14 labor and civil rights laws. It's not a new law. It's just saying that they have to comply with these 14 laws. He went ahead and reversed that. The Fair Pay Order, quoting here, was put in place after a 2010 Government Accountability Office investigation showed the companies with rampant violations were being awarded millions in federal contracts. In an attempt to keep the worst violators from receiving taxpayer dollars, the Fair Pay Order included two rules that impacted women workers: paycheck transparency and a ban on forced arbitration clauses for sexual harassment, sexual assault, and discrimination claims. So arbitration clauses. And you'll see this in a lot of contracts now. And what it essentially says is that you don't, because we all have the right, you know, to an attorney and to defend ourselves in court and all the rest, part of the Constitution or the Bill of Rights. And so what this says, when you sign this, the arbitration, you know, the contract that usually has an arbitration clause in it, and a lot of employment contracts will have an arbitration clause in it. It says that you agree to arbitration in of the venue of their choice. And since it's the venue of their choice, the rules are going to be on their terms. It's going to limit what you can do and what you're going to be awarded. Limited. They make you agree to that up front. Noreen Farrell, director of the anti-sex discrimination law firm Equal Rights Advocates, said Trump went on the attack against workers and taxpayers. Out of the 50 worst wage theft violators that the GAO examined between 2005 and 2009, 60% had been awarded federal contracts after being penalized by the Department of Labor's Wage and Hour Division. Similar violation rates were tracked through the OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, and the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board. But the research did not reveal much about sexual harassment or sexual assault claims. That's because forced arbitration clauses, sometimes called cover-up clauses by critics, are commonly used to keep sex discrimination claims out of the courts and off of the public record. More famously, when Gretchen Carlson decided that she wanted to sue Fox News for sexual harassment, she was unable to because there was one of those arbitration clauses in her contract. So she dodged her own contract's arbitration clause by directly suing CEO Roger Ailes. So this is where we're at today in 2017. Mary Tyler Moore died recently, and her show was not only entertaining for its day, but it was also groundbreaking in some of the things that it covered. I want to play a clip for you right now, and I'm fairly certain that there are some things that I'm going to need to clear with you beforehand before playing this clip. But here's the thing. It's probably in the public domain by now, so I'm just going to go ahead and play the clip. And this was pretty widely shared after she passed.
I would like to know why the last associate producer before me made $50 a week more than I do.
Oh, because he was a man.
Let me get this straight. The only reason he was paid more than I am is because he was a man?
Oh, sure. It has nothing to do with your work.
Wait a minute. You know, because I want to understand this. I'm doing as good a job as he did.
Better.
And I'm being paid less than he was because...
You're a woman.
According to the Economic Policy Institute's 2016 analysis of federal labor statistics, the median wage for U.S. women is about 16.8% less than the median for men, with women making up 83 cents to a man's dollar. According to economist Elise Gould, that's a gap that only increases as women become more educated and climb the corporate ladder. And it's a shining picture of what we commonly refer to as patriarchy. There are indeed plenty of conservative women, and I can name a few. Those conservative women are quite happy to help the menfolk protect their patriarchy. It's not that it doesn't make sense to me when someone's conservative. If you're afraid of change and you like to be referred to as a mossback, you just slow and gradual, right? But it doesn't mean no change. We recognize that change is going to happen, but you just, if as a conservative, you would like it to be slow and gradual. But what we have now is a group of conservatives that want no change. And even worse, what they would really like to do is to roll back the clock. To roll back the clock on women and to roll back the clock on African Americans. The number one cable news network, on television, I know I'm being redundant, is Fox News. And it has been for some time. Fox News, by the way, recently decided to drop the Fair and Balanced logo. Not that they were fooling anybody anyway, but they finally decided to drop it, which I think is fantastic. And over at Fox News, Roger Ailes was, and there were rumblings about Roger Ailes. There were, of course, rumblings and lawsuits about Bill O'Reilly, about the way they treated women, about the way they talked to women, how sexist, how gross they were, how Roger Ailes asked Gretchen Carlson to get on her knees to keep her job. And there's a lot of women that work over there. And one of the things I didn't realize about Fox News, you see all these beautiful women on there. And one of the things about Fox News is that if you're a lady, you don't get to wear pants over there.
You get wardrobes, but it's different than here. You used to go into a room and there were a bunch of dresses that you could choose from. I was told at one point I wasn't allowed to wear orange because Roger didn't like the color orange, so I didn't wear orange. I didn't see any pants. People always say, why didn't you wear pants? You'll notice I wear pants a lot here. Mm-hmm. I didn't wear pants because I didn't see a pants option. I wasn't given a pants option, so I had to choose skirts.
They were like, all fit into the culture. Now that Trump is in the White House, Roger likes orange again.
I agree with you, though, that this is, and both of you, actually, that this is how you hold, you know, Bill O'Reilly claims to be a champion of the free market. Well, the free market is speaking right now by coming out and
That's
saying,
right.
we don't want to advertise
That's
on your
right.
show. Well, and that is how you hold them accountable, because it's all about money in television. And if you have advertisers refusing, that's how all of a sudden Bill O'Reilly doesn't become so valuable
to the
network.
He's denied these claims, of
He's
course,
denied
by
the
way.
Claims, of course. Yeah, but you did have someone come out. Julie Rozinski came out with accusations. I worked with Julie. I mean, she's good people. I looked at that and I said, wow, you know, they have a problem if they have good people with good reputations coming out
she
now and saying
She just filed a
things.
Lawsuit against
And
us.
I've known her. I've
they
worked with
her.
They
should change their motto to pay to the order of. Because yeah. all they're doing is paying out stuff until they clear the...
That's Jedediah Bila. She now works on The View. And Fox News has made a lot... So they engage in a lot of racism and sexism now. But where Fox News really, really started, where they really started gaining an audience back in the day, was when they decided to go after Monica Lewinsky. Now, let's get this right out of the way. What Monica Lewinsky did was clearly wrong, right? She knew that she was messing with a married man, that that married man was the president of the United States, and she shouldn't have done it. But we don't just get to say her. Bill Clinton certainly knew that he was married because Hillary Clinton wasn't exactly low profile. She was very active as first lady, both as the governor of Arkansas and when Bill was president, and she became very active in his post-presidency. And then, of course, she ran for president, and then she was secretary of state under Obama. She ran for president again in 2016. She's very, very, everybody knows who she is. But the fact remains that what these two did was wrong. And Bill caught some heat for it. But the late night comedy that I heard associated with Bill Clinton was mostly, Bill's a pimp. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, that boy walk with a limp. Uh-huh, he's got ladies all daisies. But what I heard about Monica Lewinsky was much, much worse. So this is an article by Monica Lewinsky from the New York Times. Written after Roger Ailes' death. Quoting here, just 2 years after Rupert Murdoch appointed Mr. Ailes to the head of the new cable newswork, this is back during the 90s, my relationship with Bill Clinton became public. Mr. Ailes, a former Republican political operative, took the story of the affair and the trial that followed and made certain his anchors hammered it ceaselessly, 24 hours a day. And it worked like magic. The story hooked viewers and made them Fox loyalists. For the past 15 years, Fox has been the number one news station. Last year, the network made about $2.3 billion. Some experts have noted that viewers found Fox for the first time because of the crisis, the Monica Lewinsky thing. John Moody, a Fox executive, reflected on that period. Quote, the Lewinsky saga gave us or put us on the news map. As he put it in another interview, Monica was a news channel's dream come true. This is a human being who made a mistake, clearly, who consciously made a mistake, clearly. Their dream was my nightmare. My character, my looks, my life were picked apart mercilessly. Truth and fiction mixed at random in the service of higher ratings. My family and I huddled at home worrying about my going to jail. I was the original target of Kenneth Starr's investigation, threatened with 27 years for having been accused of signing a false affidavit and other alleged crimes, or worse, me taking my own life. Meantime, Mr. Ailes huddled with his employees at Fox News, dictating a lineup of talking heads to best exploit this personal and national tragedy. For a myriad of reasons, information gathering, boredom, I couldn't leave my home without being trailed by paparazzi and a touch of masochism. I watched news around the clock on Fox. It seemed that no rumor was too unsubstantiated, no innuendo too vile, no accusation too abhorrent. Let's not pretend that Fox News was the only network to cover this story in the gutter. Mr. Ailes' station may have pioneered this style of television reportage, but the other cable news channels didn't hesitate to join the race to the bottom. In fact, in late 1998, when Keith Olbermann briefly left MSNBC, he expressed disgust with the frequent Lewinsky coverage. Just as television news was devolving into a modern coliseum, the internet came along and compounded this culture of shame and vitriol. Remember, the story of Maya Fair, she's talking about herself, Monica Lewinsky, was not broken by the Washington Post, the New York Times, or the networks, but online by the Drudge Report. The comments on television and online were excruciating. I ceased being a three-dimensional person. Instead, I became a whore, a bimbo, a slut, and worse. Just days after the story broke, Fox asked its viewers to vote on this pressing question. Is Monica Lewinsky an average girl or just a tramp looking for thrills?
So I want to start with you. You obviously used to work at Fox as a political analyst. You were on O'Reilly's program all the time. I'm wondering what your reaction is to today's announcement.
Well, I mean, I think that it's stunning because Bill O'Reilly was Fox News. He had so much power there, and it was sort of unthinkable that he would ever leave there except on his own terms. And I did his show regularly for a long time, and you know, I was thinking about an incident that had happened early on in my career there, where I was on air actually with Margaret Hoover, who's at CNN now, on a regular segment. We were on every Monday, and he got Margaret's name wrong, and Margaret said, "Hey, get my name right," and he said, "Oh, I'm sorry, there's a lot of blondes in this operation. I can't keep you all straight. Megyn Kelly's coming up," starts throwing all these blonde names. And then at the end of the segment says, "Thank you for your blondness," to both of us. So I went to his executive producer and I said, he needs to apologize and he needs to never do that again, or I'm not doing his show anymore. And I was told basically, "Well, you know, Bill, there's nothing we can do about it. He's a throwback. He's kind of an Archie Bunker." And I said, "Well, if you mean he's a Neanderthal, then we're on the same page. He can never do that again. I'm a political analyst here." Went to Bill, came back, said, "No, he's not going to apologize." So then I went to I was called into my boss's office. I was told, "What can we do? It's Bill. There's nothing we can do. You know, we're sorry this happened to you, but there's nothing we can do." I complained to Roger Ailes. I was told the same exact thing. "There's nothing we can do. It's Bill. He's a jerk. Nobody likes him." And then Roger said, "You know, Bill, he likes to put up dirty pictures and ask pretty girls to talk about them." And so the whole thing was sort of Bill. Oh, and then he said, "You know, and you know, what am I going to do? I don't like him, but he makes so much money, there's nothing I can do." That was
the culture. Wait a minute. Who was it who said that?
Roger Ailes. And so this was the culture, which was Bill was, you know, just too big, and so that there was nothing you could do about it. So I did quit his show, and I didn't do it for 2 or 3 years. This was an election year. This is the biggest show at Fox. And then about 3 years later, I went back, and I said, "Look, I'm willing to give this another try." And he said, "Sure," and I came on the show. And I never had another problem. We actually ended up having quite a good relationship. But it just spoke volumes that I had to completely handle it on my own, that there was nobody that was willing to even say anything to him, just to basically say, "You can't treat one of our political analysts this way."
I remember watching, after Roger Ailes died, watching female anchors up on the screen crying, like, sad that he was gone. And I go, come on, ladies. He's not going to harass you anymore. You get to wear pants. But I guess at some point, you begin to identify with your assailant. You begin to identify with those who victimize you. Now, remember the way that Bill Clinton was talked about and is still talked about. Now, over on Fox News, they've moved over to calling him a rapist and all these other things that don't make any damn sense. But eventually, just calling him a philanderer simply wasn't enough. So they had to go to the next level. But when you think about even late night television to this day, 20 years later, think about how even progressive late night comics talk about him and then talk about Monica Lewinsky. And it's become acceptable to just shame women like that, to have that absolute double standard where we say a dude can bang it out with as many ladies as he likes, and God darn it, he's a pimp. But yo, she better put an aspirin between her knees, and joking about rape is pretty common on the right. It's humor that I simply do not understand.
Why don't you go to Somalia for 5 minutes, lady? You'll be gang raped so fast.
If you have a mother or a daughter or a sister or a grandmother, you should not be talking like this. And you should not be willing to stand for and defend these double standards. So when Trump had his travel ban, his Muslim ban, there's all these countries that are on that list. One of the countries that was not on that list was Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia was one of those countries that really, really deserved to be on that list. When you talk about all the other countries, zero. Count them, big fat goose egg. That's how many terrorists have come out of those countries in the last 50 years. Zero. But I think it's 16 or 17 of the 19 hijackers on 9/11. They came out of Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia is very much living the Handmaid's Tale right now. You may not know what that is. Quoting here from The Observer, "The Handmaid's Tale, a Hulu original series based on Margaret Atwood's 1985 novel, portrays a world overrun by misogyny. Offred, the main character, is subjected to a life of servitude under an authoritarian government dictated by religious fundamentalism." It gets interesting. "Women are stripped of any semblance of autonomy and are banned from owning their own property, credit cards, and checking accounts. Offred's worth as a human being is reduced to her ability to breed, and she lives as a slave under the ownership of an aristocratic couple. In this society, women aren't allowed to drive, work, or leave their homes without permission, and all handmaids are forced to abide by a strict regimen run by the guardian of all the handmaids, Aunt Lydia. When Offred is allowed to leave the house, militarized guards loom everywhere as a constant reminder that there is no escape. Examples are made of those who break the rules. Their bodies are hung in public at the end of a noose." Though the shock value of the story stems largely from contrasting Offred's past life as a middle-class college graduate to her life as a handmaid in a puritanical society, the elements that create this dystopian world exist in countries around the world, with Saudi Arabia as our closest example. In Saudi Arabia, it is against the law to bear children out of wedlock, and clinics that aid undocumented women who have children out of wedlock are subject to strict penalties by the government. In 2013, a Philippines-based media outlet reported that a Filipino woman working in Saudi Arabia received punishment from the government of 100 lashes when it was discovered that she was pregnant out of wedlock. This has been cited as common punishment. Children born out of wedlock are ostracized as a walking manifestation of sin, and many are abandoned because of the stigma associated with having a child without being married. Yet, contraceptives and abortion services are also banned. Even if a woman gets pregnant within a marriage, she still has no rights. In April 2016, The Independent reported that a Saudi Arabian judge forced a woman who was 8 months pregnant to divorce her husband against the couple's will because her uncles were unhappy about the marriage. The country's laws are formulated under a strict interpretation of Islam and force women to live under the authoritarian rule of their fathers, husbands, and brothers. Every woman is designated a male guardian in Saudi society. Women must obtain permission to work, study, marry, get a passport, travel, or even seek medical care. Women are forbidden from any unnecessary socialization with men, and several public areas have separate entrances for women. Women are also held to a strict dress code. Two things. My wife was pointing out to me recently the dress code at some of the local schools. And these are the same dress codes that you will find really in most schools across the nation. And they are not unheard of. And they are not uncommon. But we realize something. They are only for women. Women tend to wear interesting clothes. And I don't mean sexy. I mean interesting. I'm a dude. And as a dude, I wear pants and a t-shirt all the time. Usually a sleeveless t-shirt and then some sort of a ball cap. Boots. Boom. Same thing every day, right? The pants might be a different color. The shirt might have a different logo. They're all death metal bands. But I wear really the same thing every day. My wife has all these different shirts with sleeves that hang, and then some that are three quarters, and then some that are short, and then some that are long, and then the pants and the skirts and the dress, and it's all very, and it's very colorful, and it's printed, and it's definitely not what I was. So ladies tend to wear more interesting clothes. Dudes wear the same thing every day. So what do we have dress codes for? Well, I would submit to you that we have dress codes for the same reason that we have these religious rules that make women cover up. Because ladies, you gotta cover up, because if you don't, you're gonna make the men folk think impure thoughts. So we have the dress code, and we don't call it that. We call it a distraction. You can't wear that. It's a distraction. Those clothes are too tight. We can see skin. Are those nipples under there? Are those knees that I see? And ankles. Good Lord, I see some ankles. We have dress codes for women, but not for men. I suppose you can make the argument, but well, men aren't dressing like that. Well, if they do, they're going to get the snot beat out of them. Because that's the other attitude that we have. If men tend to dress in a way that is not expected of them, they can expect severe harassment. Let's talk about medical care. So my wife has a handbag that she got from Planned Parenthood. And it's got this long slogan on it. It says, I went to Planned Parenthood and all I got was mammogram, pap smear, STD testing. And there's this whole list of all these things. And my middle daughter was looking at it. She goes, I don't understand this bag. Is this stuff bad? Is this stuff good? And I go, no. That stuff's all good. Here's the thing. Planned Parenthood is largely a ladies' clinic. Okay, there's stuff that they do for dudes. It's true. I've gone to Planned Parenthood myself. But it is largely for women. It's mostly a women's clinic. And she says, so what's with the bag? And I said, the bag is just, it's funny, it's cute, but it's just trying to remind people of the good work that Planned Parenthood does. Well, why do people need to be reminded out of the mouths of babes? Why do people need to be reminded? Well, because the conservatives and a lot of religious types right now are trying to strip the money away from Planned Parenthood and are trying to put in regulations that would eventually get rid of Planned Parenthood, which is, in effect, a women's clinic. And they say, why would they do that? So easy answer would be patriarchy. They hate women. But I say what they want me to say. And by they, I mean conservatives. Conservatives would like me to say it's because of abortion. Nothing but an abortion factory. Just lots and lots of abortions happening in there. But it's not true. It's about 3%, maybe 3, 4% of what they do. Most of what they do is women's health care. And that's where it becomes a problem for conservatives. They won't admit to that. They'll say it's about the abortion because they're pro-life. But let's be honest. It has absolutely nothing to do with life. Because if it did, you wouldn't be attacking healthcare. If it did, you wouldn't be pushing for war. If it did, you wouldn't be attacking welfare. If it did, you wouldn't be attacking the CHIP program. If it did, you wouldn't be attacking school lunches. These things that help and support life. When you say you're pro-life, but you have a massive problem, generally, I don't want to make a broad brush statement here, but generally, if you're a conservative, you have a gigantic problem with all of these programs that support life. But the only time that your pro-lifedness really comes out is when you're talking about abortion. So you're opposed to abortion, but once that baby's born, to hell with that POS. Back to the article here. Those who protest or speak out against the Saudi government's oppressive regime are often either imprisoned or executed, sometimes publicly. Activists allege that Saudi Arabia executed 47 minors in January of 2016, one of the country's biggest mass executions in decades. Others are put in jail, often without a trial. Women are regularly imprisoned for attempting to flee the country. The recent case of Dini Ali Laslum went viral on social media, and it exposed how the Saudi Arabian government stops women from escaping. In the documentary, Saudi Arabia uncovered a woman is depicted screaming that she is innocent of killing her stepdaughter as she is held down by a Saudi police officer who beheads her with a sword. which Vice News reported in 2015. In another scene, similar to The Handmaid's Tale, the documentary shows bodies of several people hung from a crane. Additionally, like the society depicted in The Handmaid's Tale, homosexuals are also tortured and executed upon discovery. Rather than putting pressure, which is what we can do, especially as a Western society, rather than put pressure on Saudi Arabia and other countries that similarly oppress women, Western countries have allowed Saudi Arabia to cloud their violations of women's rights, and recently, Saudi Arabia was given a seat on the United Nations Women's Rights Commission. While The Handmaid's Tale serves as a warning of oppression of women in Western society, it should also be a wake-up call for Western societies that turn a blind eye to countries where The Handmaid's Tale already exists.
And as for your question on abortion, I mean, I know that's a big thing for you. I've been pro-life since high school and talking and writing about it. I've never thought about that. It's not the job of the president. It's the job, I mean, if Donald Trump were running for state legislature in the year 2060, after Roe v. Wade is overturned and happens to be in a state that's going to pass those laws, that's a relevant question. But to be upset about that, I mean, I think I'd be more upset that women are going to need a lot more abortions if we don't close our border with Mexico and bring in all of Latin American rape culture.
All of Latin American rape culture. Oh, we gotta close our borders because of those Mexican rapists. This was one of the more inflammatory things, definitely, that was said during the 2016 campaign, because it took the two favorite things of conservatives, which is racism and misogyny, and absolutely denying rape culture, and it just rolled them all into one. I've noticed something as time goes on, and I say this as a man. So after a recent terrorist attack, Bette Midler tweeted out that, and I don't want to mess it up here, but she pointed out that a religious fundamentalist man decided to take a bunch of lives. And this was after the London attacks, where they, you know, drove onto a bridge, drove over some people, got out and started stabbing people. And, you know, they believed that they did it for religion. And she pointed out, you know, men doing horrible things in the name of religion. And she said, and they're both worthless. And here's what it sounds like. It sounds like that she's saying religion is worthless and men are worthless. I found the statement intriguing. And I say this as a man, not as a man who hates men, but as a man, I found it quite intriguing. And I don't want to say, I don't want to make a blanket statement that men are worthless or that religion is worthless. But I would like to point out some of the problems that we have with them. So let's take the Bible, for example. Within the first few pages, like first two, three pages of the Bible, the story of Adam and Eve. So right away, right, there's this story where you go into the garden, right, the garden of life. You can eat from this tree and this tree and this tree. And I remember learning about this as a kid. You can eat from all these trees, but you can't eat from that tree, right? And then all of a sudden this snake comes along, which is interesting. Because if you know your history, you know, in the time before Christ, snakes weren't always considered a bad thing. You know, generally they were considered a sign of life. But as we get the Bible a couple thousand years ago, all of a sudden snakes, and to this day, are just considered this awful, evil symbol. But within the first few pages of the Bible, you send Adam and Eve into the garden. And why do that? Right? Let's say they didn't eat from the bad tree. All they did was eat from the good tree. Then what happens? Nothing? Everything just goes great for a while? It seems to me that it was set up, right? Let's just assume that it didn't really happen, that we're not talking about a historical fact here, right? We're talking about a story that was just written down, the Bible itself, just a series of stories. But why write the story that way, where they're sent into the garden to be tested
and then she takes the apple, and then she hands it to him, and it's original sin, and it's the downfall of man, and that's just what it is. And then we realize that we're naked, and we have to cover up our bodies, and we must run for our lives, and we must ask the Lord for forgiveness, and all these horrible things. And this is in the opening pages of the Bible, where they're put into the garden, and Eve is clearly being framed. I know I'm not expressing an original thought there, but she's clearly being framed. And then she gets the blame for all of the pain and the fire that falls from the sky and all the rest forever. And the Bible establishes that real early. And so we've got God and we've got Jesus, both male. And we know that Jesus is Middle Eastern, but after all this time, Jesus is now white. Fine. Jesus is just white. And you'll find this in a lot of religions where women are absolutely demonized. And so we consider ourselves, we call ourselves, or we tend to like to call ourselves here in America, we call ourselves a Christian society. So what does that mean? Well, it means we believe in this patriarchal story and we subscribe to it. And I see these bumper stickers all over town. He is greater than I. Right? It's got the he, the gigantic he, and then the symbol, and then the teeny tiny I. He, I. And that pronoun alone, we're not comfortable with the she. All gods are male. And that should strike everybody as wild. We have the word goddess, and we use it sometimes, but we never use it whenever we talk about religions. So we had another mass shooting recently, this time in Virginia, and it happened while the Republicans were gathered in a public park practicing for a charity baseball game that the Republicans and the Democrats play against each other every year. And before you get ahead of me, let me just say, the shooter was a white male, but this one broke the mold just a little bit. So they're usually, these shooters are usually wackadoos. They're usually Trump supporters and conservatives, and they usually, there's pictures of them with the Confederate flag all over the, but this guy was a progressive. And so that becomes the headline, right? That he was a progressive. And the reason it's a headline is because it's so different than what we usually learn about these shooters. We found out that he worked on the Bernie Sanders campaign in Illinois. He was a volunteer. And that becomes a thing. And once again, we're missing the larger picture here. What we know about this gentleman, and I'm not going to say his name. I really don't like saying the names of these terrorists. And I'm comfortable calling him that because that's clearly what he was trying to do. Yeah, they're members of Congress. And he was going after Republicans only, it seemed like. But it's an act of terror because it's meant to achieve a political end through fear and terror tactics, right? By making people afraid. And we learn about him that he's a progressive and he worked for Bernie. But what we don't hear as much about is that he was also a pretty good misogynist, that he had a pretty long record of domestic violence. That part of it, for whatever reason, doesn't get talked about. And you can look at any of these guys, any of these white Christian terrorists, right? I don't know if this guy was a Christian or not, but you can look at any of these guys, and most of them have a pretty long documented history of misogyny. And I can't remember the last time that I ever heard about a female carrying out one of these mass shootings. There was one in Las Vegas where they killed a police officer and then they went into a Walmart and they started killing. And it was a couple. It was a male and a female. So I suppose with that one, you could say, well, that was a woman, but she was there with him. Had it not been for him, would she have been there? Valid question. So this brings me to another point. This, another article from The Observer, how terrorists recruit female bombers. Female terrorists are normally a rare phenomenon. Quoting here, in our analysis of lone wolf terrorists from 2013 to 2015, less than 10% of the terrorists were women. So how are any of the terrorists women?
We refer to Dr. Bina Patel of Nova Southeastern University, and she has some answers. In her presentation, Women's Roles in National Security Threats, at a conference at the Western Hemisphere Society for Security Cooperation, she points out that women actually outperform men in terms of success, mission success, in the terrorist attacks that they do carry out. But how do terrorists recruit women? They prey on women made vulnerable by being unable to fit in traditional roles and the conservative societies that they tend to belong to. According to Patel, there's a lot of brainwashing, with Islam being taken out of context and strongly influenced by subcultures within the local culture. The women recruited don't want equality, she told the audience. They want to escape, and death is that escape. So they're not looking to be seen as equals with respect to terrorism and Islam. With the way they're treated in their handmade type societies, in their conservative societies, in their deeply religious societies, with the way those societies treat them, they see death as the best way out. They do so even though Islam forbids suicide. There's no room to misrepresent this, and terrorists exploit this. So which women do terrorists tend to recruit? They look for women who have been emotionally traumatized by rape, having a miscarriage, divorce, or otherwise not pleasing their husband, mother-in-law, and family. You're treated as worthless, so the terrorists say. The only productive thing you can do is to fight for us. That's the way they present it to women. And it is the only way that is acceptable. Even the terrorists' warped, presumed afterlife, which also turns out to be as unbalanced as the societies that the women are living in. While a male suicide terrorist can expect dozens of virgins after death, a female suicide terrorist can only look forward to having a husband in the afterlife. And even with being presented with that, they still take the job as terrorists.
But wait, I want to ask you just to follow up, because you don't favor a rape or an incest exception to abortion. And for people like Lee, this may be a problem in getting behind President Ted Cruz, that they think you may be too far right on social issues.
Well, listen, let's talk. You know, when it comes to rape, I've spent a lot of years in law enforcement. I was the Solicitor General of the state of Texas, and I have handled cases with horrific cases of rape, of people who committed child rape, people who, I mean, I went before the U.S. Supreme Court and argued in defense of state laws imposing capital punishment for the very worst child rapists. And when it comes to rape, rape is a horrific crime against the humanity of a person and needs to be punished and punished severely. But at the same time, as horrible as that crime is, I don't believe it's the child's fault. And we weep at the crime. We want to do everything we can to prevent the crime on the front end and to punish the criminal. But I don't believe it makes sense to blame the child.
You know what the people who favor these exceptions say. They say you'd be forcing the mother to go through unspeakable trauma to carry her rapist baby for 9 months.
Well, I'll tell you as a practical matter, Megan, as I mentioned before in visiting with Lee, in order for any legislation to be passed on this topic, you have to convince your fellow citizens. That's ultimately the check in a democratic society, is you've got to convince 330 million Americans. And, you know, before Roe versus Wade, it was a question state by state. So here it would be a question for Wisconsin. What should the laws be governing abortion? If Roe versus Wade was not the law, it would be up to the people of Wisconsin to decide. And the people of Wisconsin might decide to allow some exceptions or not allow some exceptions. Everyone agrees that you always want to protect the life of the mother. But if you trust the people, it's one of the reasons why the Constitution and Bill of Rights can be such a unifying document and approach, because ultimately the Constitution entrusts the people with making these decisions, not having them forced on us by an elected judge.
I believe that misogyny is more powerful than racism. Now, both misogyny and racism play a very prominent role in our society, and I don't want to discount the damage that either one of these things have done. But I want to say that when it comes to misogyny, I think it's much more powerful. And if you need an illustration of that, we had a black president before we had a female president. Even though she was white, we had a black president before we had a female president. And you can discount that all you want, but I think that speaks very much to the power that misogyny has.
When you look at that map and you realize, as you've just noted, that Hillary Clinton actually has 273 electoral votes, three more than needed, among likely and safe states, it makes it much more difficult, obviously, for Trump to win. Though, Rachel, I've got to tell you, on a daily basis, I get hundreds of emails and tweets from Trump supporters who believe that Donald Trump is going to win somewhere between 44 and 49 states.
Wow.
They differ about the one he's going to lose. but, you know, we're living in two different realities, two different parallel universes, believe me.
And, of course, we know how that turned out because we all, unfortunately, had to live through it. You remember the good old days where all the talk was just how she was going to win. And it's one of those things that it seemed like, for sure, she's going to win. So one of the biggest applause lines from the campaign trail was when now president, but then candidate Trump, would just bark at the top of his lungs, lock her up, lock her up, lock her up. You know, all the Hillary for prison bumper stickers, lock her up. It was a very successful thing for him.
You people were vicious, violent, screaming, where's the wall? We want the wall. Screaming, prison, prison, lock her up. I mean, you are going crazy. I mean, you were nasty and mean and vicious, and you wanted to win, right?
He blames it on them. See, right now we've got this health care law that the Republicans have passed, and Trump held a beer party at the White House. He himself didn't drink, but he had this beer party at the White House after they passed the Republican health care bill. He is now out there calling the Republican health care bill a very mean-spirited bill. And there's a lot of Republicans who are pretty nervous because this unpredictable guy keeps doing unpredictable things. Like when he was on the campaign trail and he was shouting, lock her up. And then he got people chanting, lock her up and Hillary for prison. Then he went out on the campaign trail afterwards and he goes, we were just kidding about that whole thing.
But at the last moment, I said, 9 o'clock in the evening, let's go to Michigan. Okay? Right? Because I heard my opponent had scheduled Michigan unexpectedly. It was like all of a sudden with President Obama and Michelle and Bill and Hillary, and they were going to Michigan. No, it's okay. No, forget it. That plays great before the election. No, we don't care, right?
Right, yeah, we don't care. All that locker-up stuff, we don't care about that now. But of course, Donald has been having some tough days as of late. And, well, when it comes to the tough days, he decides to revert to the old days. Back during those days when it was completely acceptable to crisscross the country screaming about how Hillary Clinton should be locked up because she was under investigation and she clearly broke the law and it was time to lock her up. Now he's back out on the road, and he's singing those same songs again.
The law and the Constitution give the president the power to suspend immigration when he deems, or she. Fortunately, it will not be Hillary she.
Oh, they like that. There it is. Now he's totally okay with the locker-up thing again. So let me tell you what's happening with him. As I am on this mic right now, it is June 15th. That's when I'm taping today's show. As of yesterday, Donald Trump is under investigation. Robert Mueller's investigation has expanded to include obstruction of justice. Obstruction of justice was the first article of impeachment against one Richard Nixon that eventually led to Richard Nixon resigning. And it gets better. According to the New York Times, Donald Trump is also under investigation for money laundering. Now, that one may not seem like as big a deal because, as I've heard more than a few pundits say, finding Trump or associating Trump with money laundering, it's kind of like finding moisture out in the middle of the ocean. But when you do those kinds of things as president, it's a little bit worse. And so what are we not hearing? And Trump has been under suspicion or investigation of things that are 10 times worse than what Hillary was being accused of, what Hillary was potentially under investigation for. And what are we not hearing? We are not hearing lock him up. We are not hearing Donald for prison 2017. We are not hearing the same hatred and vitriol that we heard. Now, you could say that that is because this is the conservatives. All that hate came from the conservatives, and now that it's their guy, it's okay. And you could take that stance, but I think that it's quite a bit stronger than that. Because to suggest that somebody in a country with laws needs to go to prison before an investigation even concludes, when that person is a woman, it's really hard to look away when you don't make that same claim, when you're not as consistent when that person is a man. So Hillary Clinton is speaking out right now about the Russia thing, about any number of things. And she pointed out where misogyny definitely played a role in her not becoming president. And I could certainly make a case for that. There were some things that she said where she said, well, people just couldn't bring themselves to vote for a woman. And I don't know about that because there are definitely a lot of racists that voted for Donald Trump. A lot of middle class people that weren't being trampled on economically but still didn't vote for her voted for Donald Trump. And it was pretty clear that a lot of those tendencies were racist. So there are some places where I will disagree with her with respect to the way she lost. But there are some places where I will agree. And she pointed this out. She said, when Donald Trump was out on the trail, he was allowed to be as angry as he wanted. And he was embraced. Even Bernie Sanders, when he was out on the trail, he was allowed to be as angry as he wanted. And he could get as loud as he wanted. And he just got embraced. But the minute she did it, the minute she was unmeasured for even a moment, she was shrill, she was hysterical, and the descriptions just go on from there. And then she gets into the coordinated campaign against her.
I think it's fair to ask, how did that actually influence the campaign? And how did they know what messages to deliver? Who told them? Who told them?
Yeah.
Who were they coordinating with or colluding with? They were conveying this weaponized information and the content of it. And they were running, you know, there's all these stories about, you know, guys over in Macedonia who are running these fake news sites. And, I've seen them now. And you sit there and it looks like a, you know, sort of low-level CNN operation. And
or a fake newspaper, or like fake the Denver Guardian.
Like a fake newspaper. And so the Russians, in my opinion, and based on the intel and counterintel people I've talked to, could not have known how best to weaponize that information unless they had been guided. And here's
guided by Americans.
Guided by Americans and guided by people who had, you know, polling and data information. Now, let me just finish because this is the second and third step. So we know that they did that. We understand it. Best example. So within 1 hour, 1 hour of the Access Hollywood tapes being leaked, within 1 hour, the Russians, let's say WikiLeaks, same thing, dumped the John Podesta emails. Now, if you've ever read the John Podesta emails, they are anodyne to boredom. Within 1 hour, they dumped them, and then they began to weaponize them. And they began to have some of their allies within the internet world, like InfoWars, take out pieces and begin to say the most outrageous, outlandish, absurd lies you can imagine. And so they had to be ready for that, and they had to have a plan for that, and they had to be given the go-ahead. Okay, this could be the end of the Trump campaign. Dump it now, and then let's do everything we can to weaponize it. Who do you think directed it? We're getting more information about all of the contacts between Trump campaign officials and Trump associates with Russians before, during, and after the election. So I hope that we'll get enough information to be able to answer that question.
But you're leaning Trump.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
I'm leaning Trump. I think it's pretty hard not to. I think that the marriage of the domestic fake news operations, the domestic RNC Republican allied data, you know, combined with the very effective capabilities that the Russians brought.
When we talk about Russia, when we talk about Saudi Arabia, which are countries that Donald Trump has very close economic ties to, we're still very much talking about patriarchy. The way that homosexuals or women are treated in both Russia and Saudi Arabia, two countries that Donald Trump is very, very tight with, and that conservatives are in general very good with him being tight with. We're talking about patriarchy, misogyny, and homophobia, to another extent, still effectively ruling the day. These may seem like very small, somewhat insignificant pieces of the puzzle, because we want to look at the shiny thing, we want to talk about Covfefe, we want to know all the crazy things that he does, but we need to look at where he's coming from, where his policies are coming from, the things that are being implemented in the countries that he has financial ties with, the things that are being implemented in this country, directed by him and by the people that own him. Now, that may seem strange, but we can't look away from the real issues while the shiny keys are being dangled in front of us.
You can't let Trump and his allies be a diversion. They are a threat, and they have been effective up until now. So Twitter is a perfect example. You're going to drive up the numbers. You've got more people chasing rabbits down rabbit holes. You've got all kinds of stuff happening. Why? To divert attention. It's like Covfefe. Trending worldwide. Maybe for a minute you'll forget the latest accusations about them conspiring with Russia or their trillion-dollar mathematical mistake in their budget or depriving 23 million people of health care. You know, it's the circus.
Yeah.
Right? It's what a classic authoritarian does. It's not just about influencing your institutions, your values. They want to influence your reality.
Jared Kushner was the owner or the head of the New York Observer, and he stepped down, but his editor-in-chief gave an interview a little while back talking about his father-in-law. Jared Kushner is, of course, Ivanka's husband, and his father-in-law is Donald Trump. And the editor-in-chief in the interview pointed out that Donald doesn't believe in any of the things that he says.
I want to read something you wrote about the birtherism. Sure. That you said at the time that Donald Trump was talking about Obama being born abroad. Quote, I told Jared I was particularly appalled by his father-in-law's birtherism stance, which I viewed as cynical and racist. He rolled his eyes and said, he doesn't really believe it, Elizabeth. He just knows Republicans are stupid and they'll buy it. Yeah. He really said that to you?
Yeah.
And what did that tell you about Jared Kushner's view of Donald Trump's Republican politics?
Well, I think it told me something about both of them.
It would seem that what Trump is trying to do is implement this very conservative worldview. But that's not what he's doing. It is, but it isn't. I mean, what he's really doing is he's just there to make money, to make as much money as possible. And he is nobody's friend. Now, I remember seeing the white supremacists and all of these conservatives and right-wing think tanks and all that, just throwing these gigantic parties after the election, really thinking that they got their guy in there. But really, he's nobody's guy. He's not my guy. He's not your guy. He doesn't care about me. He doesn't care about you, not even if you're a conservative. And if you're conservative, he finds you useful because he finds you stupid. But that's about it. And we need to look at the whole patriarchal part of this. We need to follow the money. I would love to state that we have lost our country. But we have not lost our country. We have merely decided to surrender our country, to give it up, essentially, to the highest bidder. I read something recently about how folks, religious folks, are just so enamored with this idea of dying and going to heaven, right? Everyone wants to go to heaven, but nobody really wants to die. But we die, we go to heaven. You die, you go to heaven, right? And there's this idea, right? There's this very attractive afterlife, which is very strange to me because that's not the, those aren't the kind of terms that I think in. But I read someplace else where somebody said, we are in heaven. If you think about it, the world is what we decide to make it. If we want it to be friendly, then it'll be friendly. We want water to be clean, then water will be clean. We want air to be clean, then air will be clean. If we want everyone to have enough, everyone can have enough. If we want the world, planet Earth, right? You get out of it what you put into it, you know? If we want the idea of heaven with these trees and this great climate, you know, and great healthcare and all the rest, if we want heaven, we can have it here and now. But because we live with this fatalist idea that was brought to us by male religious scholars and that are deeply ingrained in these male-centric patriarchal religions and these religious ideas, we believe that what we are living in is hell. And that what we need to do is we need to die so that we can get to heaven so that everything can get better. So that we can go into the Garden of Eden. So that we can, you know, eat from the tree of life or not eat from the tree of life or whatever the hell, is, however it goes. But what we have here is what we make. And what we've decided to do is take this several thousand year old religious text and we've decided to oppress women, half of our society. The mothers of our children, our wives, our sisters, our grandmothers, our mothers, we have decided to oppress them because we see that as the best way forward. And that's insane to me. It's pretty easy to get on this mic and to hammer on President Dum-Dum, but this show's not going to do it. I'm going to point out the insane things that are being done by this administration and any administration going forward. And we need to seriously consider the way that we treat women, because without them, honestly, there's no us. We don't make the world. Yeah, most of our construction workers are men, and they build houses and they drill for whatever, whatever. You didn't do it alone. It takes all of us. And I know that if you're conservative, that's probably a fairly foreign idea, but it's real. You need to recognize it. And if we want heaven, well, heaven can be right here. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us, facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available at the iTunes Store or at Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out there. You can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, or hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We will prevail. We are The Fire You Can't Put Out. Projecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kim for producing, and a special thanks to you for listening. This is Melvin, signing off. And now that I've woken you up, good morning.